Today we're going to be discussing the book entitled Worm, The First Digital World War. The book is written by Mark Bowden, the author of the book Black Hawk Down. Mark, welcome to the Ink Spot.
Thank you, Stanley.
Why don't you start off, Mark, just give us an idea about the internet in general. Most of us are familiar with the internet, obviously. We use it every day. But who actually created the internet?
Well, the internet started being assembled in 1969 when they connected a computer. Back then, computers were really big things at Stanford University with one at the University of San Diego. And after that, over the years, networks kept being added to it until gradually the internet spanned the entire globe. Really, today, nearly every computer in the world is attached to a network, whether it's a network at work or whether it's a network that you join in order to get internet service. And all of those networks together are the internet.
And you said that it started off as a way of sharing data between labs, for example, universities and so forth, eventually becoming a repository for all human knowledge. Then you went on to say that it is possible, and you, I guess you were sort of theorizing, it's possible that one day we might look up and the internet might actually become alive. Is that a real possibility, or is that just sort of tongue in cheek?
I think it's an idea of the sort of exaggerated kind of utopian fervor that computer scientists had for this new thing. And when it started coming together, we're still, you know, a long way from achieving anything like artificial intelligence. But what is true is that the network of computers that now spans the globe represents the sum total of computing power, really, in the world. And it's, you know, an extraordinary tool and kind of the defining one of modern times.
Turning to the book. The book is entitled Worm. Now, most folk out there are familiar with a computer worm, and we're also familiar with computer viruses. Can you give us a sense of what the distinction would be between a worm and a virus?
Well, of course, malware has been evolving over the years in step
okay, with, you said malware. What is that?
Malware is malicious software, and it would include the whole taxonomy of worms and viruses and trojans and everything else. But basically, a virus is something that you need to do something stupid to let into your computer. You need to open an attachment or an email from a contaminated source, whereas a worm can work its way into your computer without you doing anything, and often without you even knowing that it's there.
Now, is anyone out there monitoring the internet? Now, you kind of gave us an idea of how the internet was started, but is anybody actually in charge of the internet?
Technically, no. No one is in charge. It is basically just a super network of computers that have all been attached. There is something called ICANN, which is the International Corporation for the Assignment of Names and Numbers. And they're basically a phone book or a traffic cop that assigns addresses for domains so that data that enters the internet can be launched to a particular location. So these are identifying points of the internet. But ICANN really has only that sort of clerical role to play.
What actually is the internet? I mean, is it a group of computers? Now, I'm envisioning a large room, for example, in a bunker somewhere below ground, you know, 30,000 feet below sea level. And, you know, there's all these giant-sized supercomputers with, I don't know, three or four computer geeks working around the clock with lab coats. Is that not a good scenario?
No, not really, because, in fact, you know, the unique thing about the internet is that it doesn't have a sort of the same kind of sort of geographic interconnectedness that, say, an electrical grid has or the interstate highway system. It is a distributed computing network. There are plenty of large computers that are part of the internet, and there are also root servers which handle a great deal of traffic. But the distinctive feature of the internet itself is that it is basically it's just composed of the billions of individual individual computers, and you know whether you could shut down a big portion of it, and data will still make its way from one place to another because you know to kill it, you pretty much have to kill the whole thing.
Okay, now and that's an interesting point you bring up. You're saying that you can kill pieces of it, but this worm that you talk about in the book called the Conficker, is that correct? Conficker?
Conficker, yes.
Conficker, okay. So the Conficker worm, what is the Conficker worm? What is that all about?
Well, the worm is a little piece of malware that infects your computer and penetrates to the very core of your computer and basically turns over control of it to a remote operator. The other thing it does is connect your computer to millions of other computers so that you become part of a robotic network or a botnet under the control of someone who created the malware.
Right, and that guy, his name would be called Sinister Sam.
Well, we don't know who he is, but we do know that it's probably a team and that they're every bit as good at writing software as anybody in the world.
So why are they doing this?
Well, it's done primarily, the most obvious reason is to create a platform for criminal enterprise, although most botnets that are used for scams like spamming and stealing private information are considerably smaller. What really alarmed Internet security experts back in 2008 and 2009 was the size of the Conficker botnet. And when you connect 10 to 12 million, which this worm did, you have a tool potentially powerful enough to literally crash the Internet itself.
With the Conficker worm, you said that the existing firewalls that were in place and all of the antiviral software didn't recognize the worm, and that created problems. Now, why is it that the system that we had in place, the tools, the firewalls, antiviral software, why did that not catch the Conficker worm?
Because the war between the bad guys, the folks who write malware, and the good guys who are the guys who are trying to protect computer networks is one of continuing escalation. So that every time Internet security guys come up with a more effective way of blocking malware, there are folks who will devise new ways to defeat those measures. So it's an arms race in the same way as, you know, we've seen arms races in every other sphere of human conflict.
Right. So then this worm actually became bigger and badder than anything that had been out there in the past. Is that right?
That's right. And I think what really startled the Internet security folks who tried to stop it was that when they would make a move to effectively corral this botnet, the creators would make a counter move to thwart their efforts. And so there were moves and counter moves over a period of about 4 months, at the end of which the folks who were trying to stop it had accomplished probably more than any security experts had in history, and yet in the end they were unable to completely stop this botnet from pulling itself together.
Well, let's talk about strain A just for a moment. In strain A, you said that it was set up to wake up on a specific date. Now what do you mean by wake up on a specific date?
Well, in order to function, basically all the worm consists of is a program that enables it to infect your computer and to begin sending out copies of itself to other computers, and then also to begin calling home, because in order to do anything, they have to receive instructions from a remote controller, from the commander. And so the date of activation would be the date when all of the infected computers would begin calling home for instructions.
And then when they called home, now you mentioned the good guys and the bad guys. So obviously the good guys are the ones that were trying to fight the Conficker worm.
Right.
And obviously the bad guys are those guys that are trying to do some damage to the Internet. In terms of the good guys trying to fight the worm, you talked about how this worm opened or looked for or generated 250 domain names per day. Is that what happened?
Well, that's right. The standard way to kill a botnet is if you can determine where each of the infected computers will call home and intercept those calls by basically purchasing or closing down the targeted domain. That's how you sort of cut the head off of a botnet.
And when you say call home, I don't want to cut you off, but when you say call home, what you're saying is that the worm infects the computer and then it just kind of sits there to wait for instructions. And then at some point on a specified date and time, it will then go back to the original creator and ask, what is it that you want me to do now?
Exactly. And if you can prevent that communication from taking place, then the worm is essentially harmless. It can't receive any instructions. So in order to prevent that from happening, the creators of the Conficker worm included an algorithm that generated 250 new domain names every day, randomly generated ones. And the controller, in order to issue instructions, had to be behind only one of those 250 doors on a given day. So in order to stop this worm from communicating, it wasn't a simple matter of finding where it was going to call home, because it created a kind of a shell game to make it hard to determine exactly where it was going to go to receive instructions.
Finally, the good guys actually did crack the algorithm, right?
That's right. And so when they did that, they were able to dial the domain name generating algorithm forward so they could tell on any given day in the future what are the 250 domains that the worm will try to contact. And then they set about buying up or closing down all 250 of those domains every single day in order to prevent the botnet from communicating.
Is that the only way they could have stopped it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, there are other ways. You could you can disinfect computers, and if it were legal, you could probably write a piece of software and it would be kind of an anti-worm, and you could infect the internet with it, and it would seek out and destroy the Conficker worm. But that would be as illegal as the efforts of those creating the botnet.
After they figured out the algorithm, they were able to block, essentially close the door on these 250 domains that had been created every single day. Then the bad guys upped the ante. So what'd they do at that point?
Well, the new strain generated 50,000 domain names every day. So essentially in the first stage, buying up 250 domains every day was a small enough task, although it was formidable, but it was done. I mean, a guy named Rick Wesson out here in San Francisco began buying them up using his own credit card in order to shut it down. So when they started upping the ante, when they moved it to 50,000 a day, that was going to strain poor Rick Wesson's budget.
I could imagine. In terms of the strain C that was now going to generate some 50,000 domain names, which per day. Now, that seems to be an impossible task to me in terms of fighting this thing.
And yet they did it. The group fighting this thing, where they kind of called themselves the Cabal, had to contact every top-level country domain in the world, all 110 of them, and get their cooperation to shut down every day each of the domains that the worm would attempt to contact. And as difficult as that was, they were able to secure every single one of those domains, but it still was insufficient to stop the worm.
Right. That seems to be amazing that they could actually, number one, figure out the algorithm to close all the doors on these things that were being generated, and then number two, contact every single country and get the cooperation. I mean, if our government could do that, wouldn't that be amazing?
Well, I think what's really amazing, and it's the reason I think that the story is fairly amazing, is that these computer engineers did it on their own. They went and tried to get help from the government, but what they found was that the folks responsible for protecting networks were in over their heads. They did not really understand what was going on. And so this was done purely on a private, volunteer, ad hoc basis by the small number of people who actually understood the threat and understood what needed to be done.
So you're saying that the government didn't know how to solve this problem?
That's correct. They weren't monitoring it. They were pretty much in the dark about what was going on. In fact, there's a chapter in the book where the head of the Kunfiker cabal, the group that was trying to stop this thing, goes to Washington and meets with the heads of various agencies responsible for protecting government and civilian networks in the United States, and was alarmed to learn that even though they were months into this battle, the folks that he was briefing had never even heard about what was going on.
What about Microsoft? Did they have any obligation to fight the worm?
Well, they were a big part of it. Of course, the worm attacks Windows operating systems, and TJ Campana, who's one of the heads of security for Microsoft, was a central player in the group trying to defeat Kunfiker.
Now, when you say Microsoft did have an obligation because it was attacking their operating system, but did they actually... Now, I think in the book you said that some people were actually perturbed or teed off at Microsoft for not taking a more active role.
Yeah, I mean, there are people in the software programming community who feel that Microsoft dropped the ball on this, because the exploit that Kunfiker took advantage of had been discovered actually several years earlier in another piece of their operating system, and they had neglected to anticipate that same vulnerability would exist at other ports in their operating system. So there are those who feel Microsoft really dropped the ball on this. But having said that, I mean, I should note that Microsoft did issue a patch for this particular exploit weeks before Kunfiker ever appeared.
Why didn't the patch work?
Well, the patch did work, but the problem is that even those who register their operating system when they buy their Windows system fail to heed faithfully the security updates that are issued by the company. So really only about 30% of those who have authorized operating systems downloaded the patch. And then you've got millions of computers around the world, particularly in Asia, in South America, in the Near East, who use Windows operating systems that are pirated. So these are systems that are not purchased legally, and they're not registered. So when Microsoft issued the patch, it really acted as a kind of advertisement, because even though the patch exists, the vast majority of Windows operating systems will remain unpatched.
Could this thing actually paralyze the United States government?
Well, it could definitely wreak some havoc in this country. Increasingly, we rely on the Internet for vital pieces of our infrastructure in this country, things like the electrical grid, the water and sewage systems in major cities, the air traffic control system. Most cell phone telecommunications is all based upon the undergirding of the Internet. So if someone wanted to launch an attack that would shut down or crash the root servers of the Internet itself, it wouldn't destroy the United States, but it would certainly create a great deal of havoc in the short term.
Is that why you refer to it as the first digital world war?
Well, I use that term because of the international effort. I mentioned earlier the need to gain the cooperation of all 110 top-level country domains throughout the world. So this was truly an international effort against a piece of malware that was attacking globally.
Got it. Now, what about individuals? How are we at risk?
Well, any computer that's been infected with Kunfiker has been disabled from receiving security updates from that point forward. And essentially, you then belong to a network of known infected computers that can be and is sold or leased online to criminals who use those infected computers to run scams. Earlier this year, there was a group in Europe who leased a portion of the Kunfiker botnet and drained $72 million from American bank accounts. So the risk to you as an individual is definitely there. I think it's a fairly small risk. The real problem is much more, I think the analogy is one of vaccinations. If you maintain a very secure computer and you download all your security updates, you, in effect, vaccinate yourself against infections. And, you know, the real danger is not so much if you fail to get vaccinated that you'll get the disease, but it has a tremendous impact on society. You know, if, in order for the internet itself to remain healthy, we need to have a better system of computer networks maintaining higher levels of security.
Let's go back for a moment to strain C of the configure worm. You said that something was going to happen that was actually set up to phone home on April 1, 2009. What happened on April 1?
Well, in fact, on April 1, 2009, all of the Configure infected computers in the world attempted to call home or started attempting to call home. And the, you know, the cabal had managed to corral all 50,000 domains that where the remote commander of the botnet might be hiding, but Configure C introduced a new method of communication called peer-to-peer communications between computers. So, in order for an order to be issued to the botnet now, it wasn't even necessary to use the internet. It could be done just by infecting one computer that could then spread the message through this peer-to-peer mechanism to every other infected computer.
Did they ever catch the good guys ever catch the bad guys? I think you referred to the bad guys as the black hats.
The black hats, yeah. You know, no, they have not yet done so. I've heard conflicting reports. My suspicion is that law enforcement, Interpol, knows roughly who's behind this and where they are. But because, you know, this is a global problem, you're dealing with individual countries where it may not, for instance, be a crime to infect computers in the United States. So there are legal and bureaucratic difficulties in gaining the level of cooperation needed to I think, apprehend people like this.
You said that the Configure worm went to sleep. In other words, it's just sitting there sort of dormant, waiting for instructions?
Mm-hmm. Well, it hasn't been used for any large-scale attack or criminal enterprise. We do know it has been used, pieces of it, for relatively small-scale criminal operations, like the one I mentioned, the one that drained $72 million from American bank accounts. It's not always easy to tell what it's being used for, but clearly the people who created this botnet have succeeded in creating a stable platform for doing a lot of different malicious things. So far, they have not attempted to do anything on a really large scale, and there are a number of theories why that might be the case, but that's the way it stands right now.
You wrote the book Black Hawk Down, which was turned into a movie. Should we be keeping our eyes open for the movie Worm?
You know what? There has been some interest, and I've talked to some folks out in Hollywood about it. To be honest, I can't imagine how you would dramatize this story on screen because, as you've heard, no doubt, just in this conversation, trying to explain the concepts to get your sort of wrap your head around what this worm is all about, what its potential is, why it's worrisome. These kinds of things require a level of explanation that I think would be rather difficult to pull off in a dramatic way on screen.
Okay, well, Mark, thanks for joining us.
Hey, it was my pleasure. I enjoyed talking to you, Stanley.